The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. Lots of excitement in Israel over today, yesterday, with the arrival of all these dignitaries for the Fifth World Holocaust Forum. Prince Charles arrived late last night, just a little before the arrival of American Vice President Mike Pence, together with the presidents from a number of countries around the world, prime ministers, representatives from the Vatican, from the European Union, you name it, whoever's important is in Jerusalem these days. So a very, very exciting time at the moment.
Yeah, very, very, very interesting how many people are there and the global focus. So it is the Fifth World Holocaust Forum began its official program last night. That was with a dinner at the residence of President Reuven Rivlin. So that's amazing. You know, when I was in Israel for the media summit, we were just invited to tea at his house. But I see that, you know, some people he invites to dinner. But never mind that. I'm going to let that go completely. What are the main talking points of yesterday's event?
Well, I think there are a number of interesting things to talk about. First of all, yesterday we spoke about what the official date of World Holocaust Day really is, and we said the 28th of January. In fact, it's the 27th of January, which is the day upon which the Auschwitz death camp was liberated. And there are some talking points about whether this is a really appropriate way to mark the occasion of the liberation of Auschwitz, you know, with luxury dinners, as some person wrote. Is that the right way to do it? And, you know, do the survivors get the right kind of focus to memorialize an event like this? And I suppose that's one of the little dilemmas that we have, the little conflict that we have between using this day, which is the day that signifies the liberation of Auschwitz, as opposed to Yom HaShoah that we have just after Pesach, which is a day that commemorates the uprising in the Warsaw Ghetto. That's a kind of a more positive event. That's a more kind of action-orientated event and shows that Jews were really active during those times rather than a day which symbolizes the release from captivity by foreign forces. We'll park that whole discussion for a moment and let's talk about the events of yesterday. The events of yesterday were really focused mostly on French President Macron. He was involved in a few things. First of all, he met with Prime Minister Netanyahu. There was not a lot of detail coming out about their meeting. We knew more or less what they were going to meet about. There were some comments that Prime Minister Netanyahu raised the issue of anti-Semitism in France, very, very pertinent subject at the time of a Holocaust Memorial, Holocaust Forum event. He also met with Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. Not too many of the world leaders are actually making the trip to Ramallah to meet with the Palestinian Authority president, and there is a little bit of disquiet about that. But apparently Abbas did request President Macron to recognize an independent Palestinian state. There didn't seem to be a formal answer given to that particular event, but a lot of focus around an incident that took place in the old city of Jerusalem, not far from the Lion's Gate at the start of the Via Dolorosa, which is the location of the French Catholic Church of Saint Anne. And this is the church that has stood since the 12th century and carries the name of Anne, who was the mother of the Virgin Mary. Anne and Joachim were the parents of the Virgin Mary. It was believed that that is the location where the family lived and where Mary grew up. And obviously then she became a lot more famous, being believed to be the mother of Jesus. And so that's believed to be the location where Mary grew up, and the church in the name of her mother, Saint Anne. And this is a church that was gifted by the Ottoman Empire to Napoleon III, in recognition for the French support that they received during the Crimean War. It's a gift that was made back in the 1850s. And the French government consider this church to be French soil. And so when French presidents, for example, President Macron yesterday, and before him also President Chirac, when they enter this church, they believe that Israeli police and security should remain outside, because in the church is officially French soil, French property, and so therefore Israeli security is not allowed in this church. And yesterday there was a little bit of an altercation where Macron ordered the Shin Bet security detail that was surrounding him and protecting him to remain outside and not to enter the church while he went in. It was a little bit nasty. He was very assertive in the way that he spoke to these security guards that had been appointed to look after him. And of course, talking to them was of no consequence whatsoever, because they're taking the instructions not from him, but of course from further up the line in the Shin Bet. Anyway, he did issue an apology afterwards. There is some video footage of this particular incident. It was a little kind of unpleasant, but I think we've kind of got over that. A very nice event at the president's residence last night. Interesting that he chose to ask the leaders to focus on what they will be doing going forward rather than to focus too much on history. And he used the phrase, let's leave history to the historians. And I think that that's a little reference to the Polish spat with the Russians as well, who are trying somehow to influence the way that their people and, of course, others see their involvement in the Shoah, in the Second World War, in the Holocaust in general. And there is some accusation that there is an attempt to somehow try to rewrite history where that's concerned. So President Rivlin was trying to kind of surf over that particular issue by suggesting that we leave history to the historians and allow the world leaders who were gathered in that forum to move forward and to try to shape what the future will look like, rather than to try and rewrite what the past was. Mm. So that was really much of the focus from yesterday. Today, of course, will be an entirely different day. President Putin from Russia will be arriving, or has arrived this morning. A lot of the focus will be on him, not only with regard to the Yad Vashem ceremony that's due to take place around midday today in the presence of all of those leaders and, of course, other invited guests. But, of course, he will also be meeting with the mother of Naama Issachar in Jerusalem. And even though I've been quite skeptical about whether he indeed will release Naama or there will be some official announcement about it during this time of his visit today, I think the fact that he's agreed to meet her mother is a very strong statement. If he wasn't planning to make some...
Yeah, I agree. I was thinking about that yesterday. You know, you don't meet a mother to say, sorry, I'm going to let your daughter languish in prison.
Languish in jail for 7 years.
Yeah, I just can't see that happening.
I agree. I absolutely agree. Once I'd heard that he'd agreed to meet her mother, I could see that this was heading in a certain direction. There's no ways he would have agreed to meet her if he didn't have something positive to tell her. And of course, she was in the news yesterday. She'd been to the Kotel yesterday in preparation for a meeting with Putin. She's really very, very hopeful that positive things will come out of the meeting today. And to be fair to her and the rest of the family, they've really made sure to keep her name in the news and to keep, you know, everybody thinking about her, to keep her name up front and center in an attempt to try to release her from the jail. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out and, of course, how the whole ceremony at Yad Vashem will work out today. Prime Minister Netanyahu has released a video ahead of this event talking a little bit about anti-Semitism and talking about all these world leaders who will be arriving today. It's an interesting video to watch. And of course, President Rivlin's address, which is quite a short address, but I think an interesting one to listen to for those people who have the opportunity to grab hold of the video on YouTube somewhere and just listen to it. I think it's certainly worth while listening in and just hearing what he had to say.
Very interesting. Indeed. Yesterday we spoke about this terrible story about the suicide of these two young ultra-Orthodox girls in Jerusalem. Do we know anything further about this? They apparently jumped off a building.
They jumped off the Merkaz Sapir building in Givat Shaul, which of course they couldn't survive. Two young girls, aged 19 and 24, first cousins apparently, which is even more tragic for that family. Mm. And apparently there was a suicide note left behind explaining why they had decided to take this action. Of course, one has to be a little bit careful about what one reads in the press, but apparently one of the girls at least was finding it difficult to come to terms with her commitment to her faith. The girls apparently were both raised within the Chabad movement, and their families are quite entrenched in Chabad. One of them apparently has a family in Crown Heights in New York, and was living with her grandmother in Jerusalem. But the two girls had met up at their grandmother's house in Jerusalem, and from there they went to Merkaz Sapir in Givat Shaul, from where they jumped off a very, very high floor. As I say, the one girl seems to have referred to problems that she'd had with coming to terms with how she feels about her faith within the religion, and was concerned about family pressure, how her family might receive this news, and the fact that she may disappoint her family in the process. So, and that's all we really know. There was some references to sexual abuse that one or both of these girls may have suffered. I don't know how true that is, and how much can be substantiated about that particular report. But I think it does bring to the fore the difficulty that so many young people are having with regard to fulfilling their parents' expectations, and how we as parents, as the slightly older generation, accept the changes that are inevitable from our children and from our grandchildren as a result of the world in which they live. And it's interesting to view the ultra-Orthodox community in that particular light, because even though, you know, the community is considered to be relatively inflexible in many respects, including in respect of those people, those children who want to go off the tracks, as they like to call it, go off the road, there are certainly elements within that ultra-Orthodox community who are willing to accept that these children are still their children, in spite of the fact that they might not necessarily follow the path that their parents would like them to follow. And, you know, I've seen so many tragic situations of, for example, ultra-Orthodox children deciding to join the army, and then their parents sitting shiver for them as a result of this, a very, very extreme action. You know, one of the things that we can't forget is that they remain our children no matter what their actions are. And even though we might not necessarily like what they do, I think it's a very, very extreme step to take to distance themselves from us. And maybe David Abrams is the better person to talk to about this rather than me. But a very, very tragic event, and one that's left a scar of some sort, not only on that community, but on Israel in general. Unfortunately, we do see suicides in young people, and unfortunately, many of those suicides come from young soldiers serving in the army who have to put up with a lot of pressure and a lot of expectation and a lot of fear of disappointment if they're unable to fulfill what, you know, they've set out to do. And I think the army does, to a large degree, try to accommodate people by being flexible and allowing them to do different jobs where they feel comfortable and they're capable of fulfilling the job. But I think as a society, we have to look at this and ask ourselves some questions about whether this is what we want for our children, even if they might not necessarily fulfill the expectations or the hopes that we have for them.
Well, luckily we have a psychologist in studio, and maybe we can put that question to him after 8, is how do we deal with that? How do we deal with an expectation that we might have for our children not being fulfilled? What is the, you know, how do we let them know that, you know, we're not happy with their choices, but at the same time keep them within within our own love and care? Jenny says, whether these dinners, going back to the Holocaust discussion, whether these dinners are controversial purely depends on where one's focus is. If the focus is on the cruelty, torture, murder, and devastation caused by the Nazis, then yes, it is inappropriate. If the focus is that as Jews we have survived, we have grown in Torah learning beyond that of Eastern Europe Jewry prior to the Holocaust, the Jews have a homeland after 2,000 years in exile, and we are thriving. If that's the focus, then fancy dinners are highly appropriate. And I think it's beautifully said.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting way to look at it, because I think when you look at the 100,000 or so survivors who live in Israel, they might be what they would be thinking when they see these world leaders coming. I mean, these are leaders of countries who were in one way or another complicit to the Holocaust, whether they were actually government forces that were involved in perpetuating crimes, anti-Semitism against Jews, or whether they were governments that simply did nothing about preventing it from happening, or whether the governments had no control, but the individuals within those countries took it upon themselves to potentially steal property and to perpetuate actions against Jews. I mean, even the UK, which didn't allow Jews to come to Israel at the time, or Palestine as it was, when Jews really were looking for a homeland and they were stateless and nowhere to go, whether it was the United States that didn't allow those ships of Jews to arrive there, or failed to bomb
tracks Auschwitz.
That led to Auschwitz, exactly, when they had the opportunity to do so. All of the leaders of these countries have a question to answer about how complicit their countries were at the time. And now we can look up from the safety of our own country, see these leaders coming to our capital, Jerusalem. I think there is a certain celebration about that.
Absolutely right. Time is 8:01. We do need to go to news. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Very, very interesting conversation. We'll catch you on Monday. I hope you have a great weekend and a peaceful Shabbat Shalom. It is 8:01. Apologies, your news is slightly late.